Yeah, g'day, mate. You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And we are now joined by our third and final guest of the show today. We have an Australian here on the line. Happy, I don't going to say happy birthday. How are you doing, Harvey Pink? We've got you coming all the way from Nam, where it's about 8:30. How are you doing?
Yeah, kia ora, doing well, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, of course, my friend, of course. Are you in some sort of studio? Is it a home studio?
It is my home studio, yeah. So I'm currently tangled by many cables, but yeah, doing okay.
Mm-hmm. I think I read in the presser for your new album, which we're going to talk about very shortly, Everybody Digs Harvey Pink, that there was quite a lot of cable management in the studio. There's quite a lot of cables being tied into each other.
Yeah, that's right. So that was at my last place, basically the same studio, just a different house, but similar layout. My acoustic piano is at the other end of the house, so anytime I need to record it, then just daisy chain some XLRs together and run it down the hallway.
Nice. Is this the Wurlitzer that we're talking about?
That's it. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
My beautiful old Wurlitzer.
Yeah, I heard it was a bit wonky. Is it okay? Is it an okay shape, or is it a little bit like?
Killed me.
It probably. Before I record with it again, I'll probably need to get it tuned again. But yeah, it's my grandfather's old piano from America when he sort of over there with my mum's family. So bit of a family heirloom, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. What part of America did they live in?
New York.
Oh, dog, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was upstate, out of the city. Yeah, my mum went to high school there and everything. So lucky me get the piano, though. I think there's only like 50 of them in Australia, so yeah, it's pretty nice. So they really kind of shifted to making, you know, electric pianos after the 70s, so
Yeah, because I googled Wurlitzer to see what they looked like and only came up with electric stuff for me. So that's fantastic that you've got a real old-timey relic of the past. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great, and it's got a great sound too, so
I totally agree. I mean, the sound on this album was real mean. It was a beautiful sounding piano.
Cool.
Thanks, man. The album cover on Everybody Digs Harvey Pink, which came out, what, this morning? Today?
Yes.
Yeah, today.
A couple of hours ago.
Yeah, crack up. The album cover, from what I saw, was pretty straightforward, but it seems like the album cover might have changed. The album cover I saw featured the kind of track list set against a kind of blanched mustard yellow background with these celebrity autographs scattered around. Are you using that album cover for DSPs, or was that for something else entirely?
Well, so that one's going to be it's like that on Bandcamp,
right.
And for the physical vinyl pressings, that'll be the cover. But unfortunately, there are some regulations around what text you can have on an album cover on streaming platforms. So I have to make an alternate cover for streaming, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so dumb. It's so silly that there's regulations about that. God damn.
Yeah,
freedom of speech, man.
That's it, yeah.
The celebrity autographs you've got on there include Tony Hawk, David Bowie, Aotearoa's own Conan Moccasin. Big shout-out to Conan. As well as a fourth one, which I can't decipher. Are these personal heroes of yours?
They are personal heroes, yeah. The fourth one's Tom York. So,
right. I had a feeling, but I didn't want to presume.
Yeah, it just looks like a scribble. He turned the O into a smiley face, I think, in that one. Yeah, so it's really a riff on one of my jazz heroes, Bill Evans, released an album called Everybody Digs Bill Evans.
Mm-hmm.
So that was signed by his fellow jazz constituents to the likes of Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've basically just taken that as a bit of a joke to run with. Obviously, Tony Hawk didn't check out my album and give it his 5-star review, but I hope he does. Yeah.
Surely. I feel like I listened to a little bit of Bill Evans, but now I don't think I have. Maybe I've just found him somewhere on one of those playlists around the place. The instrumentation on the track Come On Inside, the opener. I really like it. I love openers that do that, very minimal. And it features just a bass guitar and piano with these really ethereal vocals kind of underscoring different moments throughout. It was quite literally music to my ears. Why do you play such a minimal, close, intimate song at the start? You know, was there much forethought behind that, or was it just felt right to you, or just kind of go and do what you wanted to do?
That's a good question. I guess for me, the songs all kind of started pretty bare. It was the first thing that I'd worked on where I just kind of wrote it all for voice and piano, and then kind of in recording decided to figure out what to do with things afterwards. So it was supposed to be like a pseudo grand opening, but in the production, I guess having it a little bare, I thought kind of drew in the listener a bit more. Mm-hmm. I think it makes the next song pop, and I think that, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of some of the things I was listening to around the time I was writing it. So, like the first Grizzly Bear album, Horn of Plenty, which has a lot of kind of eerie, ethereal, naked piano and ghastly voices. Mm-hmm. So yeah, channeling that a bit, I guess.
Nice. When I'm talking to artists, I don't want to be like, oh, you reminded me of this, but just because of how that song's structured, it reminded me of a King Crawl song called Wind Vanishing, which I think came off his last record, which is
cool.
Just in the kind of structure, not necessarily in the sound, because there's quite different sounds, but yeah, Come On Inside, really great way to start this off. There's a song here called Learn from the Dinosaur, which came out in 2023. What do you think the biggest lesson we can take from them is, and what is your favorite dinosaur?
I kind of like the pterodactyl.
Your pterodactyls are mean.
Yeah, they're pretty mean. You know, I love birds, so I guess that's a close ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the song itself is really kind of, it's about extinction more than anything. So although they weren't in control of their own destiny there with the meteor that hit the Earth, you know, we can learn from them that as great as we want to be, mm-hmm. We might be doomed to extinction. I think that humans at least have a little bit more control over that path, and that's kind of the message there.
Mm-hmm. There's kind of a film all about that called Don't Look Up, which is I thought it was an alright film. I'm not crazy about that director, but I did kind of like the metaphor of, you know, there's a meteor in the sky and we got to destroy it, otherwise it's going to destroy us. And obviously being an allegory for climate change, which seems to have dropped from the popular conversation, which is quite infuriating, really, because it's like, it's probably going to wipe us out if we don't do anything about it.
Yeah, still got work to do on that front for sure.
Oh, we're going to start somewhere. We're still going to start, yeah, frankly. I appreciate that. It's good to have a bit of existential angst around the place. Do you think that was a big motivator for a lot of the songs on here?
Yeah, I'd say so. At the time, I guess that was kind of a running theme. Just, I guess climate change is a good example. Like, we kind of know everything that we need to know about it and just remain stagnant and don't make any changes or do anything different or take any threats seriously. Obviously, the people do. I'd like to think that all the people tuning in today do take it seriously, but, obviously the people in positions of power are preoccupied with profit and that sort of thing, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think a massive problem with people in power as well, in terms of politics, like in the Western world, like they've just become managers and they're not really doing anything. They're just kind of just maybe making like one or two modifications to the system and then passing it on to the next person while all these things happen, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And everyone's worried about their profile and not the outcomes of humanity, really. So,
yeah.
Electability over survival, I don't know. I'm not really for it.
Yeah, totally agree. The track Let It Out is a pretty intense emotional song. It's about letting out all your emotions after kind of bottling them in. And this is actually similar to a conversation I had with a New Zealand artist recently. But do you think you channel your energy into anything in particular when you let it out, so to speak? Or does it just kind of, those emotions just kind of come forth from you uncontrollably?
They just kind of come forth. I mean, like, I use music as my outlet, really. So, it's a song I wrote about writing songs about letting it out called Let It Out. So, I think it's, I don't think I'd be able to survive really without the outlet of music. So, You know, it's almost an homage to that. And you know, it's sometimes it's kind of hard to be sure of what you're thinking and feeling. But I guess when I get behind a piano, I can speak most clearly and succinctly about what I'm thinking and feeling. So, yeah.
Nice. I want to touch on the closer here very briefly, but the closer here was done in one take, which I think is pretty awesome. Does this kind of thing happen quite a lot for you? Are you quite the believer in like capturing lightning in a bottle?
I am after that take, to be honest. I didn't do it so much with the other tracks on this album, but yeah, absolutely. I think there's something kind of magic about it, you know. My friend Dylan, who produced the album, was playing the bongos up the hallway next to the console, and I was down the hall with a microphone in front of me and sitting at the piano. And so, I mean, we could only talk through the talkback mics yell down the hall to each other. But I think there was something really magical about bouncing off each other's energy there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally. I agree. What do you think you're going to do next after this album? Are you going to do some touring over in Australia? Are you going to get back to writing? Are you going to take a break? What's on 2025 for your for you?
Yeah, so I've got a few gigs already lined up in Melbourne. Doing a launch show in about 3 weeks in a local Thornbury venue. Playing around town in May. Got a few gigs queued up, and then I'm hoping to, in the second half of the year, play some other shows in other parts of the country. I need to get some venues booked pretty quick, probably. Mm-hmm. But definitely writing already. I'm in this weird duality where I've written half an album already.
Wow.
For my next release, but I'm releasing this one now. So I guess that makes performing it a little challenging at times because my head's somewhere else, but mm-hmm. Hopefully I can tie that one off by the end of the year and have it out next year or maybe the year after. We'll see how long it takes, but yeah, I definitely want to get over to NZ as well.
Yeah,
at some point. Yeah, I've been there a few times. I love it over there, so I think it's on the cards. I think I'll just probably try and do maybe New Zealand and Australia at the same time in the kind of same bill, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love it over there in NZ, so yeah.
I mean, yeah, me too. Well, I do notice between your last two, or between this album that you just come out with and your previous one, Flying Pretty Close to the Sun, there's about a 3-year gap. But it sounds like you're pretty far through the pace of this album, so you don't think you'll have that same kind of time gap between the one you've just put out and the next one you're writing currently?
I mean, I could. I don't like to put time frames on my writing, so you know, I guess at this point, if I want to finish it to how many songs I want on this next album, we're looking at, you know, having it done by the end of the year. That's like one track every 2 months is what I'm shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of consideration that goes in, you know. And then that's just demos at this point. Then I'll have to track it all, then get it mixed, get it mastered,
mm-hmm.
teach the band how to play it if I want to tour it.
It's a lot.
All of that stuff, so there is a lot, but I mean, I'm optimistic by the start of next year we'll be in a good position, so yeah.
Fantastic. It seems like it's always the start of the new year, it's always a good time, everyone's very optimistic, and then by the middle of the year, like, oh god.
Yeah, when winter hits, yeah.
It's a bit brutal.
That's it.
I want to thank you for your time and coming on, Harvey. I know it's about 8:50 over in Melbourne, so I appreciate that you're an early riser in that regard. And I wish you the best for all the shows and for the album you just came out with. I think it's going to go far.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for having me on the show. You know, I am very familiar with Dunedin's rich musical history, so it's a real privilege to be on the show.
Oh, cheers, man. I really appreciate that. And have a great day in Nam. I hope you enjoy some of that beautiful food that you get over there that we don't have here, like banh mi.
I will do, absolutely.
Nice, take care, man. All right, folks, that was Harvey Pink. We're chatting with them about their new release under the name Harvey Pink's Flying Bathhouse. Here's Chamber of Lights and Mirrors from that new album, and then after that we'll have Kai Time and maybe a little bit of news. It's 10:51 here on the Adju Breakfast Program. Ka kite.
Yeah, now, Siebs, that was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.